Hallo liebe Weites Feldhörer, schön, dass ihr wieder eingeschaltet habt. Die aktuelle Folge läutet eine Phase ein, in der sich der Podcast ein bisschen intensiver mit dem Thema neue Medien, Online-Kurse und allgemein digitale Bildung auseinandersetzen wird. Vor allem im Bereich Musik gibt es super spannende Entwicklungen, die den Blick in Richtung Zukunft von Instrumentalunterricht, Musizieren und Community-Bildung richten. Wenn euch hierzu ein spezielles Thema interessiert, nehmt gern an der Umfrage auf der Patreon-Seite teil unter www.patreon.com/weitesfeld. Dort habt ihr neben einer Menge Bonusmaterial nämlich auch Zugriff auf Umfragen zu den Podcast-Inhalten. Mein heutiger Gast ist Eric Caraway, der übrigens Amerikaner ist. Und deshalb switche ich jetzt aus Höflichkeitsgründen mal zur englischer Sprache. Eric Caraway is the founder of Percuss.io and co-founder of drumlinechops.com. After becoming a professional musician, he decided to take the next step and learning how to code and develop different applications. This enabled him to combine his passion for music with computer skills and ended up in several startups that deal with online music education. How Eric got to do what he does and what inspires him to spend hour after hour on creating and innovating is only one thing we will talk about in this Weitesfeld podcast episode. Have fun! Hey Eric!
Hey Max!
Guten Tag, Max!
Yeah.
Great start!
No, we have to go with it!
Absolutely! So, hey Eric, so nice to meet you here in the cozy Dinkelsbühl.
Dinkelsbühl? Yes.
You did all the travel from Stuttgart.
I drove from Stuttgart today.
Several hours.
Beautiful drive.
But maybe because you're coming from Texas originally.
Yes.
Maybe you can tell something why you are based in Stuttgart right now.
I am currently living in Stuttgart. My wife, Katie, she works for a large government organization that has a headquarters in Stuttgart. So she had the opportunity to take a job here for the next 3 to 5 years. And my work allows me to work from anywhere. So I thought I would tag along.
That brings me to a very interesting point. Your work,
yes.
It's like, I basically, and maybe most of the listeners know you from an Instagram or a Facebook also project called Percuss.io. Percuss.io, I hope to spell that right. And, but this isn't your main thing. You do lots more things. Is that right?
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough to say, like, you know, what do I do as a profession and what do I do as for money and what is my passion and how do all of these things work together? There's some overlap for sure. But currently by profession, I am a software developer. So I work remotely for a digital agency and we take on different clients and our current client is based in San Francisco. It's a video collaboration platform. We were talking about the David Fincher movie Fight Club earlier. And he is like one of the people that uses this platform for collaboration on film. You know, after a shoot, you get dailies and these have to be edited and shared among the collaborators on the film. So they use this particular platform, this software to do this collaboration. And I work through an agency as a contractor for the company that builds that software. So that is what I do, you know, roughly 40 hours a week. And then all of my other time is spent on Percuss.io, which, is a passion project. It's technically a business. Maybe someday it'll be my full-time thing. But I'm not trying to rush that.
But how does this connection come between, you know, programming things, writing programs or other things on the computer and being a percussion addict at the same time? So which one was first?
Which one was first? This is tough because if we go back a long time ago, like, you know, I'm still in middle school, high school, they kind of started at about the same time. I joined the band, you know, in the school band, but also I was signed up, you know, my mom said I was signed up for too many music classes and you needed to take something else. And so I went to the guidance counselor. I was maybe, this is a freshman year of high school, so maybe 13, 14 years old. And I don't know, the guidance counselor looked at my grades and she's like, oh, you would probably like to take a computer science class. So yeah, I took a computer science class, learned some fundamentals of programming at a very young age. But then got very into music and then did that for a long time. I went to school for music, bachelor's degree, master's degree, taught. I was a full-time teacher for years. But then, you know, towards the last couple years of my teaching career, was teaching myself to program, was really interested in music visualization and building tools for my students to learn music. And I'm like, if I want to do more of this, I need to learn to code. Started doing more of it in the nights and weekends as a hobby. And then that just gradually transitioned into changing industries. Mm. Yeah.
And was at that moment you recognized that you were so interested in building these things like Percuss.io. Was it like from one day to another, you quit all your other things and started with that, or was it a flowing process?
A little bit of both. It was a flowing process. Like I can look back on it and all of the dots connect, but at the time, it was a lot of maybe fumbling around. I'm not sure. Like, I don't really know that I fit in as a full-time music teacher. I have, you know, other passions, other things I like to create and build things. But, and the time commitment was so much, and I was, you know, going to get married at the time, and like, oh, I'm doing this programming thing, and I'm finding myself enjoying this. And so, yeah, that gradually more and more interest, doing more of it. But there was definitely a pivotal moment when I said, I'm going to leave the security of this full-time job, and you know, I know where my next paycheck is coming from, and I'm going to like quit my job without any guarantees and go do this training program to learn to code in the hopes of finding a job doing this.
Yeah. So you were quitting your job before you really got to know where maybe you find your place in the other world of programming.
Yeah, it was scary. It was very scary. Yeah.
And was there like the idea of like we know Percuss.io today? It was like this idea of the visualization of this rhythm videos or something like that at first? Or was it first like you quit your job and you started working in the computer business and then there came the idea of this one?
So when was the genesis of Percuss.io? I can tell you when I bought the domain name, because the domain name is
what
like,
about this name?
Yeah,
maybe you can
name
something
is like so much of the brand and like the identity. So this was summer of 2014. I'm in this, you know, this intensive training program for people who are looking to change their industry. So for me, I'm going from full-time music education. I want to go to full-time computer programming. And I'm like, oh, you know, I want to build a portfolio. And eventually, maybe in 10 or 20 years, I will maybe have a career where I can combine these two passions. I can combine, or three passions really, with music, education, and software. Like, well, you know, I just start working towards that. I'll buy a domain name. Maybe I'll do something with it someday. And this is the problem with programmers. Like, we get ideas, you know, maybe at a bar on a Friday, and like, we like, oh, I'll buy this domain name and I'll turn this into something great and it'll be my startup and I'll make millions of dollars and retire on a beach. But like most of the time, these ideas, they die.
If you delete the millions of the dollars idea, I think musicians are pretty much the same, right? With some ensemble projects or something like that.
Yeah, it's like projects, you know? So I bought the domain name because I'm like, oh, you know, I want to do something. It's like, it's part percussion, it's part technology. And in this idea of like I/O, like a lot of tech companies will use this I/O, you know, end of the domain name. We call it a TLD or a top level domain. So in the States, there's like .com, .edu for education, or .org. Here you have like .de or .de.
Very, very good.
But .io, I think it's actually like Indian Ocean or something, but like some tech companies use it, you know, because it's like input and output. It feels computery.
No, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And you can take the word percussion, and if you just chop the N off, and you can like have the whole word there. And there's something about like it being short. Like there's that aesthetic of like a short domain name is sexy. So I'm like, oh, percuss.io. Yeah, but it's been a hard time because people think, oh, is it percussion IO? Is it like percuss EO? And I'm like, no, it's percuss IO.
Now I feel very bad about our talk before this.
Like, you know, if I could just go on every podcast and evangelize, like, this is how it's pronounced.
Okay, so nobody will forget it anymore because everybody is listening to Weitesfeld, the podcast, of course.
Weitesfeld. This is wide field.
Yeah, right.
Wide field. Yeah. So this is like.
So it's like, you know, you don't know where it's ending, you know, it's like you're thinking about there's so a wide field of possibilities to do. Yeah,
I feel that way about percuss.io.
It's very nice. So you were buying the domain.
Yes.
And afterwards, like, what were your first projects?
Yeah, the first project to go on percuss.io was demos for... Two friends and I, we had this idea. It was around 2014, 2015, when in the States became really popular at the time, this idea of daily fantasy sports. So DraftKings was one of them. This idea that like you could enter into fantasy sports, but just do like an immediate, like just for one game. So like DraftKings, this idea of like daily fantasy sports. So we were going to do like a fantasy sports, like fantasy football kind of idea, but you would choose like from your drum line, like they go to these contests and they're judged, and there are these different captions for judging, like general effect and percussion execution and the visuals. So you would, you know, create your own like fantasy drumline based on, you know, the different, it's hard to draw an analogy because I don't know in Europe you have like this drum corps thing.
Yeah, no, actually we don't have it that much. Maybe before you could tell some sentences about that, because that was your first job, right, as a teacher there. And how about this drumline thing? It's a really big deal, right?
So in the States, like this is a big part of my music education. Like, you know, I went to college for percussion, but I really learned to play and learned to practice doing this activity called drum corps, which is like, it's like professional marching band. Like that's the best way to describe it. But if you say professional, people are like, oh, you must be getting paid to do this. But no, you pay a bunch of money and you travel all summer and you rehearse every day and you're in a different city every day, like performing with these dancers and these brass musicians, and it's on a football field. And
how about the musicians? They're basically students, right?
Yeah. So you can do it until you turn 21 or 22. So I did 6 years of this before I then taught for a few years afterwards. So it's like this huge part of my musical upbringing. But the idea of this thing was called band draft. The first thing that I demoed on the percuss.io site was that then for these contests, you could be a spectator, but choose, you know, I want to choose the brass section from this group, and I want to choose the drumline from this group and the color guard from this group, and I will compete against other fans, and we will do basically the idea of fantasy football.
But I mean, second question, how about these fantasy sports that you say were really big that time? Yeah. How exactly is it about that?
Yeah, so the idea would be that, because it's kind of the same model of like in fantasy sports, you choose, you know, I want to choose this for all the positions on a football team. You choose the player from this team and a player for that team, and you have a budget to spend. This is all virtual.
I see. So it's like the new version of this old card games you could imagine with this thing. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was just like the first project, you know, that fit this criteria of, oh, I'm using my skills in technology, but I have a background in music and I know this community. And so, you know, I built a little app and we demoed it, and got a little bit of traction, but we didn't really know how we were going to monetize this, because at the end of the day, you're kind of like betting on the performances of kids, and like, I just kind of fell apart.
So you as you build that, you really chose the characters of real life musicians.
Yeah.
So really the musicians of one marching band were in this app with a picture or something?
Yeah, that would be the idea. And so then you would pick your team, like your fantasy team or your fantasy band, and then they would go compete in real life and get real scores. But then on the like fantasy virtual side of it, you have the algorithms would tally the scores and they would be winners. And, you know, if we bet money against each other, there would,
Okay, I see. And but in real life, how is it with this competition? So the drum lines or the bands are like traveling through the whole country?
Yeah, like during the summer,
That means during the school break. So they don't have parallel do some school stuff.
Yeah.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so and that was the first step. What came after it?
So let me think after that. Things really took off with Percussio when I created a Facebook page. You know, I was like, oh, I'll do a Facebook page. And I started to do these keyboard percussion visualizations. In Texas, which is where I taught music, students every year would have to learn a particular set of etudes for these statewide competitions. And I found myself as a teacher, like, oh, there's a certain way you kind of have to teach this stuff, and it's very repetitive, and, oh, these percussion instruments, you can't just, you know, pick up a marimba and take it home to practice. So you need other additional tools for learning this music, and what can I build using technology to make this learning process easier for the students and easier for me as a teacher? So I started creating these keyboard percussion visualizations, music synchronized with the performance, and ways of showing on a keyboard, like, what do these shapes look like? And it kind of took off with that, and then started doing more adventurous things, and a few things took off as viral videos, and one project just followed the next. Yeah.
So this is very interesting, because nowadays there are a few apps, I think, that work with this concept of visually learning an instrument. Even if you, I mean, that's a bit different from your project, of course, but even if you haven't played the piano yet or something like that, you are able to learn every Bach piece with this, you know, falling down Tetris-like notes or something
Tetris,
like this.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
What do you... think your idea was also like they with the visualization they learn faster, or is it only like an extra thing?
Yeah, that was the theory. You still as a student have to invest time, you know, get behind the instrument. But as much as you can do to supplement your instructor with your time with like an instructor, as much as you can use additional resources, I think as percussionists, you know, we suffer from this problem because our time, you know, our access to these instruments is often very limited, you know? So is there a way to, using technology, put resources together to make things easier to learn? That is the big, like, overarching idea. Yeah.
Okay, and after these first videos with a keyboard visualization, what was next? I mean, how did this project go on, got some attraction, and how was this going on?
The first video that really was something different, something out of my wheelhouse, which was not keyboard percussion, it wasn't marching percussion. The first video to do, like, exceptionally well virally was a... it was a friend of ours, her name was Terry, and she was playing like these kitchen condiments. So like if you can imagine onion spices in a condiment, you know, and then some sort of like pepper, like a shaker thing. And she was playing some very interesting and challenging, what you would say, like salsa rhythms, but with it was just like food. It was kitchen stuff. And I was like, oh, that's kind of fascinating. Like on the surface, she's, you know, a non-musician may think, oh, this is, she's just messing around, whatever. But, you know, I transcribed it and I wrote every note out. And I'm like, what she's doing here is actually very difficult. She's got, you know, 32nd note rhythms that are in time, and she's got a 3-2 clave in her left hand, and then these dotted eighth notes go over the bar, and it's so complex and executed so well. So I transcribed this and then put this like synchronization of the video and the, you know, the notation under it, and just put it out there. And like, I wake up the next day and it's like, oh, a million people have watched this video. Like,
it was really like that. You go to bed and you wake up and it was like a million of people. Really?
Yeah, this is the thing, like with time zones and everything. And sometimes I'm a night owl and I finish projects late at night. I'll put a video out there, and you know, it's for every, I don't know, I make tons and tons of videos, and every now and then, like one of them through randomness, maybe, like just catches on, you know? And then, yeah, like this just went viral. Like Facebook has this ability to, you share it when your friends share it with 5 other people, and they share it with 5 other people. And yeah, so this video was the first thing to like, to really blow up. And I'm like, well, okay, maybe there's something here, because this is appealing to a lot of audiences. This is like, you know, the kind of, it's the academic, you know, it's like the people that are studied and they understand these rhythms and what they look like on paper. And, but it's also like it's accessible, like anybody can understand this. And there's something there that is funny, but there's also something that's like educational. And what does this mean? Like, how do I capture this? You know? Yeah. Things like diverged from there.
Sounds like the perfect education, you know? It's like a bit funny and it's a bit education. Yeah.
Yeah. From there, it became this phenomenon of like people all across the internet. Like when a video gets a couple million views, then your inbox just starts blowing up, and like people just start sending me stuff. And this is tough because Percuss.io has never been one of those, you see these pages on Instagram that just, they repost other people's stuff, and they don't even often like tag or credit people, and they just repost stuff and they just want to build their own following. And so people would like, I get videos all the day, like, and I'm like, well, I have to put my spin on this. Like, I have to do something with it that for me is a remix or a recontextualization or finding an opportunity to collaborate, to like do this 2 + 2 = 5, like to take two different things and mash them up and come up with something new. That is, because I won't just repost other people's stuff. So people send me things, and the first, this guy, B.C. Manjunath, he's a South Indian classical Carnatic percussionist. He sends me this conical video. Like, what is this? I have a vague idea of what conical is, but
there are a few videos of him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is years later. I remember them very, very well. Yeah.
But he just sends it to me, and I'm like, okay, this is fascinating. First and foremost, I want to know more about this. I would love to do something, but it's going to take me a while to figure out what to do.
So how long did this first video take you?
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm starting from scratch. I've never, like, I don't know anything about conical. So, you know, I'm like, hey, so most of what I do is like, you know, it's like maybe putting, you know, rhythms, like I'll write it out, I'll synchronize it. Can you help me out? He's like, well, we don't really use Western music notation. In this tradition, it's entirely passed from guru to the student. And like, oh, okay, well, I read music, you know, like, but okay, that's a great place to start. Let me start down this process of like studying this and transcribing. And I watched all his videos and learned, okay, what are these syllables that I'm hearing? Okay, what, like, how do you write these things out? Like da, di, gi, na, dom. Mm-hmm. How do you spell that even? Because, you know, in different languages, like the da is somewhere between a th and a d, and like, what do I use? So it's this like, well, your question was how long this took. So this first one took over 6 months.
Really?
It took a long time. It was 6 months of like, you know, I had like the first 80% done. I didn't have like the second 80% done. This is like the thing where things take way longer than you expect. I'm like, oh, I think I'm almost done. And then, no.
And maybe it's also interesting because for not only percussionists, this type of music is so interesting.
Yeah.
And have there been some books or, I don't know, articles, websites, videos where you started to get in touch with this kind of music?
Yeah. Yeah. So I use I use Evernote a lot, which is an application for just like clipping stuff and keeping things. So I would like find YouTube videos and add links and find these PDF resources and track down all of the information I could find and start to then, after this kind of research phase, like gather things and kind of assimilate all that and come up with, okay, what is this first initial project, you know, going to be? Like, I'll do some video that features Conical. I don't know what it'll be yet, but yeah. And then it was like September, and he had reached out. It was coming up on maybe 9 months since he had first sent me this video. Like, all right, well, I need to finish. Like, at some point, you just have to ship. You know, you have to, like, you have to finish, you know, put whatever you have out there. And yeah, it was this guy that, this guy, Brandon Arve, he had posted something about Conical, and I'm like, all right, I need to finish this Conical video. And so then it was like, I think my wife was out of town on a trip, and I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna brew a pot of coffee. It's like 11 p.m., and I'm just gonna finish this. And yeah, I finished the transcription, made the video, and then, yeah, this one, again, millions of views. Yeah. Yeah. It's like totally unexpected. If you had said, you know, hey, you're gonna start this thing, Percuss.io, and within the first couple years, you're going to be doing transcriptions of South Indian vocal percussion. Like, I would have had no understanding of that. Yeah.
Sounds really great. And from then on, you're like posting videos every few days or something?
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, because I'm, you know, managing other things. It's, you know, I have a full-time job, so... yeah, I mean, I try to find opportunities to do creative things, visualizations, mashups, try to, like, you know, take some complex musical ideas and, you know, just how do we, yeah, like, adapt this to this, like, new format, which is the social media post, you know? Like, we're learning how, you know, the restrictions of this new, yeah, if you want to call it an art form. Like, how do you make content that is captivating but not clickbait? And how do you, like, do things that are artistic? And how do you, you know, convey musical ideas that are interesting to you? Yeah, so that's kind of the idea.
So is it like, because you say overnight there were a million people watching those some videos?
Overnight is so tough,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because it took, like, I mean, just to finish that was 9 months. So was it, it wasn't overnight.
No, I mean, but after you posted it, you know,
yeah,
that was very fast. But because it's so interesting to have someone that is in between this cultural music thing and the technical skill thing. Did you do something afterwards to maybe make Percuss.io more public? I mean, some maybe social media skills or something for the cultural scene?
Yeah, so I've was primarily on Facebook. So started doing stuff on Instagram, which has its own set of challenges. You know, video on Instagram has to be square. So then, you know, I'm learning how to edit video, how to, like, you know, learn to use Final Cut, because I was using like iMovie before this, and I'm like, it's so hard to make square video in iMovie. So
yeah,
now
it's very basic.
Yeah, right. So yeah, just like learning tools. Like, I have this idea. I want to do, like this rough idea for a project. You know, what are the technical skills I need to get together for this? You know, is there code to be written, or is there manipulation of other software, or bringing things together to like execute this vision in my head? Yeah.
Especially in the case of, is there a code to be written?
Yeah.
Many, many composers, or also contemporary musicians, use some kind of code today with their performance pieces, or to create some new pieces, compositions, or to organize their maybe a performance with electroacoustic music or something like that. Did you do something like this also because you're so firm with the programming stuff, maybe Max MSP or something?
Yeah, so I started in something very similar to Max MSP, which is a program used for a lot of like visual artists who do live visuals in combination with live music. And so I come from that tradition. So like, you know, some programmers are, I think, you know, maybe surprised to see that most of my visuals are driven by MIDI, which is like a weird way for, you know, different programs to talk to each other. So I, a good example is this Fibonacci conical video, which...
So that, just to understand for the crowd, that's very interesting because, of course, the many musicians will know the MIDI format.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was thinking about how exactly you get the audio and the visual in time.
Right, exactly.
So it's like you're extracting the MIDI information and then you use this for the visuals?
Right. So this is this process of like beat mapping, kind of, because if it's a live performance, there will, of course, be fluctuations in tempo. So, you know, in one of these like conical videos, for example, where this part of this aesthetic is that it just rushes towards the end. And the tempo they start with is much slower than the tempo they end with. So if you're like, okay, I'm going to drive my visualization at, you know, 120 BPM, but by the end of the performance, they're at like 140 BPM, your visualization will be out of sync. So there are different tools for like beat mapping and like splicing up audio. One of the tools I use a lot is called Sound Slice. And then you can extract the sync points in like kind of a machine readable format. And I can write some code to parse that and then tell a sequencer that, you know, okay, do four counts at this tempo and four counts at this tempo. And oh, he slows down here. But, you know, that sequencer is generating MIDI, which then goes over to some other software to make a visualization.
So, and because that's so interesting, you combine so many technologies for this process. Are there any experiments, or have there been any experiments with like writing pieces with this programming stuff, like you see in Max MSP or something like this? Have you tried that?
Composing pieces, not for me. It's like I'm very interested in this idea of like more collaborations, but I've. I've used a lot of different technologies for composing myself. So I'm comfortable in, in Ableton. The first thing I learned on was a Windows program called like Acid, which was later bought by Sony. And this is, I still like go back to this program and it's so old, but yeah, there's something to like, you mentioned tying lots of software together. I think there's this thing of like, whatever tools you have at your disposal, you just learn the ins and outs of those. Like, for a lot of my visual editing, I use one of the built-in Mac programs just called Preview, I can crop and I can rotate, and some of the resizing of images I'll do with just like a calculator and figuring out what the pixels need to be. And like, yeah, just using the tools that are at your disposal to do like, the most important thing is the creative vision and not letting, like the tools should serve that. And I think some people just learn a tool really well and then they're so bound to like what that tool can do.
So the message a bit like, because, you know, I'm working a lot on electroacoustic compositions and like electronic music and combine this with acoustic music. And lots of performers that I meet in my workshops are asking like, you know, how to maybe get in touch with this technology, because to many classical musicians, it's like, oh, there's technology. It's like, go away from that, you know, stay away. And they were asking like, you know, what's the best way maybe to get in touch with this? And that's maybe a very, very nice message to say, okay, you have to have an aim of what you want to do with that. And then you'll find your way through several maybe software solutions or something like that. But maybe, from the view of a musician, how is it like, what would you maybe recommend to do your first steps into yeah. this, like, because as I was telling this Max MSP thing is a real yeah. big deal in the contemporary mm-hmm. music scene. So maybe if some of the podcast listeners are really interested in experimenting with some of these stuff, just to see yeah. what's possible. Yeah. Is there any recommendation how to get in touch with this computer language yeah. thing?
Start with whatever you have at your disposal, you know? Somebody says, oh, I want to start, and I have an interest in being a music producer. So what software should I buy? I'm like, what do you have? You probably have some free thing on your computer. So just start from scratch. There's not going to be a clearly defined path from A to Z. You just start somewhere, learn the ins and outs of that tool, and when you feel limited by it, then go reach for, you know, the Max MSP. But yeah. But if the question's about I want to learn to code, start with JavaScript. That's the best advice I could offer. Start with JavaScript. But yeah, there are no easy answers. Just make stuff. Yeah. Make stuff, and over again.
And because you're like kind of this tech nerd, did you only do such experiments with coding, or mm-hmm. are you also the kind of person that is like, you know, unboxing any electronic devices and building or effects?
I think about this because you say like, you know, unboxing and tinkering, and a thing that I have battled with for a while is, you know, how much of what we end up doing as artists is, or as a profession, is determined by these like innate traits that we have from birth. Then how much of it is like truly like choosing what we pursue? And this is a big question for me, because in programming, in tech, like, I'm an idealist, and I want to say that anybody can learn to do it. Some people think, this is it's a highly specialized thing, and only certain people can be programmers, and only certain people can be musicians, and only certain people can pursue this, whatever the endeavor is. And like, I really want to believe that, you know, given enough, you know, interest and persistence, anybody can do anything. But I also know that as a kid, I was like the tinkerer, like take apart the toaster, like experiment and like try to figure out how things are put together. And there's this, so, you know, you see that behavior in children, and you're like, oh, that kid will be an engineer. Like, let's put them on the engineering path right away. But then also I had, you know, lots of things that were like put me on the artist path. So this is tough to have like a foot in each.
But it's great because now you combine those both things yeah. to a really great new one, you know? What about the actual projects? I mean, is the Percuss.io the only thing in this music case you run at the moment, or is yeah. it like, are there more projects?
So so Percuss.io, it is, it's a number of things, like in, you know, the artistic, like, moniker in front of all of my artistic and creative things, all of the collaborations, but it's also a business. Percuss.io Software LLC is the official business, you know, that I've filed, and it's like a technology services provider, products and services for musicians that are looking for technology solutions. So I collaborate with some other business partners on a web-based percussion education platform that right now focuses on marching percussion. And so this is called drumlinechops.com. And this, if you can imagine like masterclass.com or like a Teachable or things like Khan Academy, where you can go online and learn about a particular skill, we do that for percussion. Mm-hmm.
So, and this is not launched yet? It's like
It is launched. It's been around for a while, and we are just making new content for it, and producing and promoting, but it's for kind of this specific thing, which is like marching percussion. So this drum corps thing that we talked about earlier, it's for students that are like focused on that. So this rudimental drumming.
But that's really interesting because I got to know that, you know, almost, is it right? Almost every student does something like this. Yeah. And is it high school or where is it?
Yeah.
Like almost everybody is like playing any instruments in this band or almost wants to do this, right?
Yeah. So the activity in general, marching, percussion. Yeah, it's a big part of the culture, I think, in the States. Like, because... yeah, we have like, you know, high school football, especially in the state of Texas, which is where I moved to after college because I wanted to like do this in the part of the country where they were doing this at the highest level. And of course they're doing, you know, high school football at the highest level in Texas. And so marching band is very well funded and supported, and the schools there are much larger. So, you know, I taught at a school with, I don't know, 4,000 students, a big school. So, of course, we have, you know, 3 full-time band directors. And I, for the first couple of years of my career, was like full-time, and I just focused on teaching the percussion students. That was my first, position outside of college.
Yeah. And... you were talking like of Percuss.io as a platform also for musicians who need some technical help in something. What right. could that be if some listener is like asking if he or she could need some help?
Yeah, so I think a lot of time there are musicians or teachers and maybe they have an idea for an app, you know, but they don't have the technical skill. I collaborated a couple years ago with a percussionist who, he's like, I have this idea for maybe a kind of metronome that helps you understand metric modulations. It's this highly specialized thing. Like if you're playing, you know, quintuplets at 120 and you see in the music, you know, the quintuplet equals the 16th note when you go into the next time signature. Like, what is the math on that? How do I know how to set my metronome? And so we collaborated and ended up building, we ended up building this thing, metricmodulationcalculator.com.
.com.
Yeah, and it was this like little, it was like a one-off project. But I think like this is part of my goal is to do lots of these kind of one-off projects and collaborations. Percuss.io may never be like one, you know, one epic, you know, app or platform that is just everything I want to do all in one. Like I think the answer is, at least for me as an artist, is to do like lots of little projects to like put myself on a deadline and finish something and go on to the next one. And it's only through this process of iteration that I get better. So yeah, this collaboration to build through software, this something to calculate metric modulations, which is this highly niche specialized thing. That is something that, yeah, I wrote the code for, kind of came up with the idea for as a collaboration with another artist. Mm-hmm.
Sounds great. So it's a shout out on everybody who's like looking on some business in that case, because I think it's a real thing for musicians to find somebody in the tech scene
right.
that really understands what you want to do.
Right.
You know, it's not like too simple often to find somebody to that understands this artistic thoughts.
Mm. Yeah, and I think often like the technical part is not. Lots of people know how to code, right? And you can go on lots of websites, and if you need just to hire some one-off programmer to knock something out really quickly, you can find somebody to do it dirt cheap, and you're probably going to have a terrible experience. Like the thing about these collaborations is that you need somebody who can speak the same language, right? Because if you have this idea, we'll take the metric modulation calculator as an example. Explain that to a non-musician. Like, well, okay, where do we start? What is a metric modulation? But, you know, if somebody collaborates with me, I speak the same language. You know, I have a master's degree in music and I've taught for years. So I understand where musicians and educators are coming from. And so the technical skills are almost just a means to an end.
A question that came to my mind in this second is like, how is it the other way around? When you meet some customers in your day job, is it like the same thing the other way, that you are able to maybe open the mind of business people to the thoughts of creative people, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Especially now that, you know, my current agency work is much more, it is engaging, and it's like art, the kind of artistic and products that are in front of people. It's not, you know, what we call like line of business, you know, spreadsheet applications. Like these are things that are solving like interesting creative problems. And so to be able to have an understanding of, you know, the product and the customer and really the people side of it and that collaboration, because the technical stuff like that comes, and you have to have a lot of technical skill. Like I have to know how to program, but it is much more common to find people with excellent technical skills, but that don't have the adequate collaborative and big picture understanding. More common to find that than to find like somebody that can collaborate, but they don't have, you know, enough technical skills.
One very interesting thing that I really like to hear what you think about is, I'm like researching a lot of how I maybe, because there are lots of applications nowadays that you can use for maybe for free or also for several dollars or euros, that are able to be used in musical way and also maybe in a learning way. So what are you thinking about if maybe it's very good, or maybe it's a good idea to involve applications in music pedagogical processes, something like that?
Yeah, I think we're at the very early stages of this, and it's tough. Maybe we will look back in 20 years and figure out we were figuring it out, you know? We were trying things and experimenting and stuff that's just, you know, figure out what works and what doesn't. Like this whole thing of remote lessons to do, like what is the best way to do, like to have access to music teachers in all parts of the world? How do you do that, you know? So there has to be a video component, but there also is probably some supplemental component. And then how do you organize curriculum? And then what sort of, you know, platform is this on? Is it an app? Is it on the web? There are so many questions to figure out, and it feels very early. But I think we're going to look back in 20 years when we've solved these problems and scaled this. And so now anybody in any part of the world has access to like the best education, you know? What if, you know, a kid in the middle of nowhere who has, you know, the nearest, like he's very into timpani and he wants to be an orchestral timpanist, but the nearest orchestra is hundreds of miles away. I think we're gonna solve these problems of giving people everywhere with any sort of like resources, like access to the best.
Totally agree. And and what's like, maybe if we look in a bit like a practical way, there are so many applications. I mean, of course, that's the cheapest one is the metronome on the on the iPad. But what about all those? I mean, there are some effects. Mm-hmm. There is GarageBand that everybody uses for free and something like this. Have you ever thought about such apps, or maybe also building such apps to use them for specific learning processes, maybe in teaching percussion or other instruments?
Yes, for sure. On this platform, Drumline Chops, drumlinechops.com. We can come back to this about how like this idea of pitching and selling yourself is this third leg of the stool that I like, oh, it's
Many musicians maybe can learn something about that.
It's so tough. But we'll get to that. But so we're working on this platform, my collaborators and I, and our goal is we take these performance videos of great educators and we kind of curate them and organize them so that you're not just thrown onto YouTube where there are hundreds of thousands of videos. Where do you start? So there is a curation process. There is the ability to, in addition to just seeing the performance, there's instruction, there's the notation with the video, and so you can start anywhere, you can slow things down, you have this easy way of navigating through the lesson, and just like learning on this online platform. That's kind of the focus. I don't know if that answers your question.
But. Yeah, absolutely. But I was also very interested in this, what you think about, you know, there are some live processing applications, not only to watch a thing to learn it, like a video or like this live video or something, and the scores, of course, but to, you know, use some live electronic stuff for any learning situation.
For learning. Hmm.
What I found out, for instance, is like...
You did a digital delay thing recently.
Yeah. You read about that. You saw that. Yeah. That's like, it was like the book is being published, I think, this or next month. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I started learning something from you, just telling this inside of the podcast. It's like, yeah, it was very much about this. I used to replace the metronome with a delay.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if you like, the thing is like, I was like seeing so many students playing with the metronome, and the problem often is, as you might know, you're playing something like with the metronome, and if it's away, you're not like playing in time, you know, only because of you have practiced some hours with the metronome. But with the delay thing, it was the situation that when you started to play out of time, the delay is like going very weird. It was like a quarter note delay tempo or something like that. And if you play some 16th notes etude or something like this, you have to play very in time to get a very clear 16th notes delay.
Because it's giving your own playing.
Yeah, some like an echo. Yeah. And if you're like becoming like a bit late or a bit early, it's like collapsing and like, you know, dancing really crazy stuff. So I was thinking like this maybe is a very interesting way to replace this thing of blinking light metronome that you don't really feel if you're a bit too early, a bit too late, and it's really hard to get this. That was the kind of research I was doing there.
Oh, yeah, interesting. I like how that, you know, you have this product at the end, which is this these performances that use acoustic instruments but have the digital delay effect. So there is this tangible thing that you can put in front of people, you can perform, it's a product. But there's also this like education component. There's this learning that has to happen along the way, which is you must learn to play in time, but in a different way than you're used to. Yeah, that's fascinating.
That's a great topic. I mean, we could talk about this for days. So maybe at the end, you were talking about this third leg thing.
Yeah, so this third leg, right? So I have this idea that like a stool. We were before we went to grab some coffee, and we were talking about this particular IKEA stool, and it has four legs on it, right? And I was talking about this perfect design, and the idea that like a stool, this IKEA stool, so well designed, had four legs, and I feel like for me and where I am right now, you know, at the end of 2019. Where am I as like an engineer, as an artist, as an entrepreneur, as an educator, is that there are four legs to my stool. There's this music component, there's the education component, and there's the technology component that we've talked about. But there's also this fourth leg, which is the business and entrepreneurship component. So at the first 3 months of this previous year, 2019, I took a sabbatical. So I talked to my the company I work for, the agency, and it was maybe 9 months in advance, and I said, hey, I have this project that I work on. Here are some of the projects that I've done. I've had some success. But I want to spend like a dedicated period of time to focus on it and really try to figure out the business side of it. So I'm like, can I take a sabbatical? Can I step away from my full-time job, unpaid, for 3 months just to work on this? And so during that time, I focused on, I was doing creative projects, but I was also, I attended an entrepreneurship class. There's a very disciplined way to approach this, how to learn to do like an elevator pitch. And it's like practice, you know? It's like learning certain things. It's not one of these, we have this idea that certain people are salespeople and other people are not. Like, no, it is a learnable skill just like anything else. It's a learnable skill. It just takes, the right mentors, the right amount of repetition and dedicated practice. So that's kind of the fourth leg of my stool right now, is like I'm trying to figure out the business side of it.
A lot of the people in the creative business, I think, are very interested in this fourth leg, because everybody has to learn this so hard, right?
No, it's especially as an artist, you're an idealist. You know, you're a freelancer, you come out of school and you say yes to everything. You know, every opportunity, you're like, you need me to travel 100 kilometers to play this gig and there's no money you say yes to everything. And then we're just idealists. But I think the more of an idealist and an artist that you want to be, like, you have to be more savvy and think like a business person, no matter how uncomfortable it is.
Also, because every episode is like there are some show notes with important links or something. Is there any book or any website you can maybe recommend for this idea?
So for me, the way that I ingest most of my information these days is by podcasts. So I'm a podcast junkie. So there are lots of entrepreneurship podcasts, and some of them are kind of, I don't know, off-putting as musicians. People may have been familiar with this guy Gary Vee, who is like, always be hustling and you gotta crush it. And I don't really identify with that personality. Some of the things that he says I appreciate, but one of them that I think is great is called How I Built This. And How I Built This is a podcast that talks with entrepreneurs, business people, about their company and like what were they doing in the early stages? You know, what was guiding them? What were they thinking about? How were they experimenting in those early days? And then what hardships did they face along the way until, over the course of 20, 30 years, they build, a big successful company that we know today? Yeah, I listen to a lot of those and they really inspire me.
Okay, so I'll get something of those in the show notes for everyone listening to the podcast. As you know, because we were talking about this before and you were saying it's very funny because the more popular the podcast is becoming, so the guests are knowing about the four questions at the end.
Yes, the four questions.
And I'm so curious. So as you know, at the end I'm asking four questions to every guest. Yeah. And the first one is there something that you're learning at the moment?
Yes, I am learning Deutsch.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm trying to be kind of deliberate and systematic about it. So I have a private teacher, and we have lessons twice a week over Zoom, which is a platform like Skype. Her name is Tina.
Shout out to Tina.
She said she would listen.
Oh, great.
So.
when she's writing me afterwards, I will put her website on the show notes, of course.
So I study with Tina twice a week, Tuesday, Thursday mornings on a very regular schedule.
Maybe you can send some greetings in Germany to Tina. You want to?
Hello, Tina.
Okay.
Oh yeah, it's so it's such a challenge. It's a challenge for me because this is my first second language, and I am in my late 30s trying to do this for the first time. And but I'm also fascinated by it. And yeah, it's I like thoroughly enjoy learning it. So it's a challenge though. So I'm with my flashcards and I will listen to all of your podcasts in Deutsch and like, you know, pick up just little bits here and there, but yeah, it's tough. Learning a language is very hard.
I very much recommend Weitesfelder podcast, yes. The German lessons for learning some German stuff, because they're very, very fast talking Germans, you know, and if you are able to understand everything, you're a really good German language speaker. What are you reading at the moment?
What am I reading right now? So my friend Anthony Garone, who runs a website called Make Weird Music, he works in tech, but has this project, and he released his first book called Clueless About the Work, which kind of has ideas about, it's like how to be successful in business and really like follow the things that you're passionate about. But it's written from his perspective, and I know him really well. He has some samples on medium.com, so I've read those, and yeah, it's great. So that's kind of what I'm trying to work through at the moment. But yeah, I'm trying to spend less time reading my phone and more time reading paper.
Another one for the show notes, but that's so funny because everybody, you know, so many people on this question is like, I mostly read emails.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because we're all like, you know, information junkies. And so for me, like even the book that I mentioned is a nonfiction book. And so if you want to read, like if I want to read before bed to relax, like don't read nonfiction because that's when all of the ideas come and like it's so hard to get to sleep. So yeah, it's tough.
The podcast is accompanied by a playlist on Spotify. I mean, you can listen to the podcast on every platform and on the website weitesfeld-thepodcast.de. Uh-huh. But there's also a playlist and every guest is kindly invited to add
like one or two
songs, maybe three.
Yeah. Three would be pushing.
Yeah.
I'll do two. We've mentioned a lot about, you know, acoustic music and electronic music. And I'm like, I have interests in both. I will mention one acoustic thing. My favorite two instruments are the marimba and vibraphone. So there was a duo album. I think this is actually a quartet. Aisha Duo, several years ago, released an album called Quiet Songs. And I think the last track is called Amanda, which is this beautiful tune. It has a beautiful cello melody, but it's marimba and vibraphone. And it's like claim to fame was that it was released kind of like included with the Windows Vista operating system, which is like a terrible computer operating system, but it's like one redeeming quality is that it brought some attention to these obscure percussion instruments, the marimba and vibraphone. So Aisha Duo's Amanda. And then for the electronic one, my buddy Carlos Botello, who is he's a drummer, an educator, lots of hobbies, does like Mai Tai, kickboxing, and all sorts of things. But he's gotten into like modular synths and has been releasing in 2019, I think, six different EPs. And my favorite track of his is called Release Day. And that is, I think, off of his latest, maybe second latest EP, Release Day. And it's beautiful use of synthesizers. And it has a great combination of like, very like buzzy, like rezzo synth textures, but also these mellow pad textures. It's just a great instrumental synth. I just loop it and program all day. Yeah.
Great. I added this one to the podcast, to the podcast playlist. The last question is really, really interesting because you're like managing your day job, which might be enough for some people, 40 hours of work and to have some rest afterwards. But besides that, you're managing so many projects. We got to know about some of them in the podcast interview now. And you are like telling, don't read the wrong things because you are not able to sleep. The ideas come, you know, it's like very dangerous because when the ideas come, you will not find some sleep. How are you dealing with this amount of work and thoughts and ideas? And what do you do to clear your head out of these things and get some rest?
Yeah. I have tried. I've tried meditation a couple times, and I just can't do it. Like, I don't have that. I don't have that ability.
The ideas come during the meditation. Yeah, I assume.
So for me, like, the good close second is taking walks. Like, I take really long walks. I'm kind of do some weightlifting and was into like exercise and powerlifting, but a while ago I had like an accident and hurt my thumb and couldn't like weightlift, but I could walk. So I got into like taking just like really long walks, like first thing in the morning. So I would not eat first thing in the day. And I think this idea of, I tried intermittent fasting for a while, which can like, sure there are like physical benefits in losing weight, but the mental clarity you get in just like training yourself to not eat for the first half of the day and then taking like long walks, this walking, walking for me, I'll put a podcast on or sometimes just like some music, and walking just helps bring clarity. Yeah.
That's a perfect last words for the podcast for your final walk through Dinkelsbühl, the fairy tale city.
It's so beautiful here.
We'll post some pictures maybe so everybody wants to come to Dinkelsbühl. So thank you so much for taking the time for this wonderful interview. So interesting things to learn from you.
Thank you for having me. This has been a blast.
And hope to see new videos on Precursor.io soon. We'll take all of your recommendations, books, websites, German teachers in the show notes.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Auf Wiedersehen.
Thanks a lot to Eric Caraway, who traveled quite a long time to meet me in the lovely town Dinkelsbühl, where I was teaching my students right before our talk. I hope you enjoyed the podcast episode as much as I did and look forward to the upcoming content on everything online music education. If you like Weites Feld and what I do here, please consider to become a patron and support the project. You can find our site on www.patreon.com/weitesfeld. And as a patron, not only help me to create podcasts, but also get access to a lot of bonus content. I will also put this link into the show notes and hope to meet you soon on Patreon. Take care and goodbye.